Okay, and we're at the tip of the music. This is the Barden Report. PJ Barden is my name. And we're here on this 14th day of September 2019. And today, for the entire program, we're going to run a newly released, fantastic exposition by David Icke. And Brian Rose, who interviews him, but he gives a fantastic, accurate, sharp as an attack, chronological explanation of the lies of 9/11 and what actually happened. And just saying to Ken there, it's we're putting together one major video and nine or ten others. But the first one, David Icke has written a book called The Trigger. It's the entire up-to-date, putting all the evidence together, and I think it's the best I've seen. I haven't seen read the book yet, but this first piece is 47 minutes long. We'll break it up with the ad breaks as normal. But they start off, and we're starting at, I wrote down 14 minutes 24. I tightened it down so it fits the program. So when Ken is ready, we'll start off with David Icke on 9/11. What really happened?
Going on from what I said earlier, Brian, is what you've just described is an extreme version of problem reaction solution, because in the middle of that, you have to get the public in fear. And 9/11, as you've just described, got the American public in a level of terror. And I've done an enormous amount of research over the last 30 years into mind control techniques. And one of the classic techniques of mind control is to get the target in states of extreme fear. That what they do with children, horrific as it may sound, we're dealing with psychopaths, by the way, the psychopaths behind 9/11, they will get them, while in captivity in these mind control projects, to experience their worst nightmare. They'll put them in a pit with spiders. They'll put them in a pit with snakes. They'll make them terrified, because it's a well-known trait of mind control that if you get someone in states of fear and terror, they become suggestible. So you've got a traumatized, quite understandably, American population, which then becomes suggestible to what needs to be done about it. And as I show in the book, the suggestions of what should be done were planned long before 9/11 and have played out ever since.
Where do we start, David?
Well, I think, as I've said in the book, I'm not setting out to say what did happen, although there's a phenomenal amount of information that says and leads us to see in so many ways how it was done. But my point was to show that the official story didn't happen. It's what didn't happen that opens up the story, the conspiracy. And with 9/11, it's some strange thing to say. It's basically like a centipede. Centipede with loads and loads of legs, aspects, parts of the story. And every single one, as I show in the book, of those legs has an Achilles heel. Something that says, this doesn't make sense, or this can't have happened because of A, B, C, and D. And the biggest Achilles heel of all is Building 7. Most people, well, whether it's still most people, I don't know, but one heck of a lot of people have no idea that three buildings fell on 9/11. There was the two World Trade Center towers. There was Building 7. Building 7 was owned by Larry Silverstein before he bought the lease, weeks before 9/11, and increased dramatically the insurance in the case of a terrorist attack. Got the lease on the World Trade Center towers, which we can get into later, because Larry Silverstein absolutely needs to be in public view. So Building 7 was a 47-story steel frame building. And it fell at 5:20 in the afternoon on 9/11, having not been hit by a plane. And if you look at it, you can go on the internet, put in YouTube, Building 7 collapse. You will see the most obvious controlled demolition you will ever see. The first 2.5 seconds of that building falling were in free fall speed. Because what was below as the top fell, had already gone because it was a controlled demolition. You see, every now and again, you see on the news, you see stadiums blown up and big towers come down, and they fall. They don't fall over where they can hit other buildings. They fall on their own footprint. It's exactly what Building 7 did. What the official story says, he takes a breath because even I can't believe it. And this is the official government explanation of why Building 7 fell, was because of office furnishings fires, which would never even get close to the heat necessary to destabilize a building. And Building 7 coming down through fire, not even from a plane hit, but from office furnishings, official story, makes it before and since, in the whole of architectural engineering history, the first steel frame building to fall and collapse because of fire. And as synchronicity would have it, this very week, the University of Alaska Fairbanks has produced a report after a four-year study into asking the question, could Building 7 have fallen because of fire? I cover the interim report in the book. This week, they produced their final report. And they've said, these are academics and engineers and building people, no way could Building 7 have fallen through fire. So Building 7 is a massive symbol of the lie that is 9/11, because it could not have fallen. And I quote in the book so many different building experts, engineers, architects, saying it's a controlled demolition, Building 7. And there's even, of course, people won't realize, most people won't realize, there are groups of experts in their field, like architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth, pilots for 9/11 Truth, firefighters for 9/11 Truth, a great stream of them that have been created since 9/11 to challenge different aspects of the official story, which makes no sense. And so we have a situation where Building 7 was a controlled demolition, quite demonstrably. And you know who told us it was? Larry Silverstein, the owner. He made a big mistake. He was caught with his pants down here. He was interviewed on a PBS, Public Service Broadcasting, documentary about 9/11, not long afterwards, or some time afterwards. And he was describing what happened that afternoon in regard to Building 7. He said, what happened, and I quote him word for word in the book, and you can see it on the internet, you see the clip. He said, what happened was the fire commander came to me and said that Building 7 was unstable. And Silverstein, who made a fortune out of the insurance payout, said, well, you know, there's been such a loss of life that let's just pull it. Means controlled demolition, the building. And he said, and then we sat there later in the afternoon and we watched the building come down. One, that fire commander has never come forward and said, yes, we had that conversation. Never happened. And secondly, there's this little matter. First of all, fire officers do not control, demolish buildings. Experts do. And secondly, it takes weeks to put the charges in the right places within a building the size of Building 7 for the building to be made to fall on its own footprint in a controlled demolition, which is exactly what Building 7 did. So, first of all, building experts say it's a controlled demolition. And secondly, Silverstein said it is, and describes a story of how it came down, which is absolutely impossible. And I would say this to the mainstream media. Why does it take people like me to ask those questions? Why haven't you asked questions about the blatantly bloody obvious in regard to that alone in the last 18 years? So Building 7 was a lie of massive proportions. Then you look at the Twin Towers. The Twin Towers fell in freeze-fall speed, a mean figure of about 10 seconds. And for some, see, the official story is that the towers fell because the weight of the falling debris above was pancaking and collapsing the building below. Well, hold on a minute. You know, I didn't go to a good school, but I am able to work out that when something pancakes, there's resistance. So how did both towers fall in free fall speed? Because all the resistance below had gone before the debris above actually was able to strike it. But that's not a problem. Not a problem. What you do, Brian, is you get experts in, building experts. You get them to look through the steel and the rubble, and they'll tell you what brought the building down. If there were charges in the building, they will be able to find that. So it's not a problem, except the man in overall charge of the criminal investigation into 9/11 was a guy called Michael Chertoff, a rabid ultra-Zionist extremist who oversaw the whole criminal investigation. In the hierarchy underneath him, the decision was made to clear the World Trade Center site as fast as possible of the rubble and the steel in both the Twin Towers and Building 7 and take it to two scrap yards in New Jersey and the New York area. The rubble was taken away by an ultra-Zionist controlled company, and they used GPS tracking for the trucks because they said the contents is so sensitive. Sensitive? When they got it to the scrap yards owned by ultra-Zionist companies, they cut the steel up immediately into short lengths, put them on ships and ship them out to Asia for smelting to become someone's fridge. And the New York Times, I quote it in the book, it's when you mention, Brian, the people who died and the people who lost loved ones left behind, who I dedicate the book to. Tell me what this means in terms of contempt for those people. The engineers and people that were seeking to investigate how the towers came down, all three of them, were outraged that the evidence was taken away so fast, as it was, by the way, with the Oklahoma bombing of the Murrah building in 1995. And this New York Times article describes this scene. In one of these scrap yards in New Jersey, where the rubble is piled up and the steel is piled up, ready for cutting and sending to Asia, big grabbers are coming down, picking it up, moving it around. And this New York Times article describes how engineers and people investigating what happened on 9/11 to the buildings were waiting for the diggers to pull away, and they were running into the rubble and looking to see what they could find in terms of evidence that would be useful, and then they would run back off for another one coming down. If ever I have described total contempt for the victims both living with it and those who died on 9/11, then that scene is it. So why would a government, military intelligence network, not make 9/11 the most painstaking, thorough investigation into any a terrorist attack in human history, given what you've very brilliantly described in terms of how people were affected by that. Instead, they want to rush away, get the evidence out of the way, so experts can't establish without doubt, how those buildings came down. It's an extraordinary story. And every area of 9/11 has this theme of contempt for those who died and loved ones left behind, and efforts to hide the truth of what happened. I mean, how about this? There's a few firsts in 9/11, a few never happened befores, including the suspension of the laws of physics, by the way. Whenever there's an air crash of any kind, the investigators established the nature and proof of the nature and identity of the plane or planes. And they do this very simply with every crash. They take the parts they found, and everyone has a serial number. They then check the maintenance logs of the plane, which every time a part is changed, and there's some called time change parts, which have to be changed in a period, whether they're damaged or not, or worn or not, they have to be changed. And they see that the maintenance log code for that part and the code on the part found at the crash are the same. Every crash does that, because then they know, yes, the identity of the plane. On 9/11, to this day, that has never been done. They have never established, in the simplest way possible, that those four planes that left the airports were the ones that hit the building and crashed in Pennsylvania. And I know this for a fact because the FBI had to admit it. There was a Freedom of Information Act request for the documentation showing that that was done to prove that the planes that left the airports were the ones that crashed. And the FBI replied, that was never done, and the reason why is the identity of the planes was never in doubt. Well, when you read the book, you'll find that the identity of those planes was absolutely fundamentally in doubt in terms of whether they were the same planes. I say they weren't. How about this? Every time there is a hijack, the first thing a pilot has to do is punch in a 4-digit code immediately. It takes that long.
Okay, we'll take a break and we'll be back with David Icke in a few minutes.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing: knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Hey, is that a new music app?
Yeah, check it out, Surfer Music Discovery. It links to thousands of online stations, but the twist is you see the song names and artists that are now playing live.
That's different. No guessing. Looks like a waterfall of music.
So many formats. Rock, oldies, country, R&B, jazz, and a whole lot more.
How's that spelled?
Surfer. S-U-R-F-R.
Is it expensive?
It's free. No need to sign up or sign in.
Get the Surfer Music app free from Google Play or the App Store.
And we're coming back in, and we'll continue on with David Icke on this incredible revelation of what really did happen on 9/11, Twin Towers.
And on the ground, they realize there's a hijack. Happens every time, except on 9/11. None of those pilots on those four planes, none of them punched in the hijack code that day. Like I say, it's never happened before. All over this story, and in every aspect and every area you look at, the house of cards comes falling down. And I just repeat again before I just finish this point. If I can do it, then the mainstream media have been able to do it worldwide for the last 18 years. Why haven't they?
Why haven't they? Because they're supported by advertising and the Defense Department, and they don't want to rock the boat.
Well, The greatest form and the worst and most insidious form of censorship is self-censorship, where you know you mustn't cross that line or there's going to be problems. And of course, you can have journalists who, not many in the mainstream, it seems to me, who would like to ask questions, but what goes in the newspapers, what goes on the news bulletin is decided by those that run the organization, not by individual journalists. So you have a situation where a house of cards that is so blatantly a pack of lies has gone uninvestigated and unchallenged by the mainstream media for 18 years. And that is another insult to those who died and loved ones left behind. Hmm.
Let's just zoom out a bit, because in the first two chapters of the book, you talk about your concept of kind of the spider's web, and then you get into what you call the hidden hand, some of the people that were involved in this whole process. And then I'd love to get in a little deeper into the flights and then, sure, of course, go deeper into your problem reaction solution system. But for people that don't know, what do you mean by the spider's web?
The question that people ask when people like me talk about a few controlling the world and the direction of the world to a very, very clear and specific end that I talk about at the end of the book, It's an understandable question. How could a few control so many people? It's not possible, but it is. And you know, when I used to do jigsaw puzzles, I've done one for a long time, but when I did, I always wanted to get the outside frame first, the straight bits, because then it becomes easier to put the pieces in the middle. So when I started uncovering the fact that, yes, a few people do control the direction of the world, I wanted to know how they could do it. And this is the structure through which they do it. Imagine a spider's web. In the center is the spider. That's deep in the shadows. You don't see that. And that's dictating events. The strands in the web immediately around the spider are the most exclusive secret societies. Many of them don't even have names, which makes them harder to track. And as you come out in the web, still in the hidden, you start hitting the secret societies we do know about, but we don't know what goes on in them unless you do serious research. These are the Freemasons, and I'm talking about the inner core of the Freemasons, not Fred and Joe down the lodge, you know. We're talking the Knights Templar, the Knights of Malta, Opus Dei, the inner core of the Jesuit order, and many others. And you come out of the web in that, still in the hidden, and then you hit what I call the cusp. These are organizations that are kind of semi-secret. Thanks to, you know, people like me who do what I do, they're less secret than they were, but they're semi-secret. These cusp organizations, which are organizations like the Council on Foreign Relations in America, which has driven U.S. foreign policy in so many ways since it was formed in 1921, the Bilderberg Group, created in 1954 at the Bilderberg Hotel in Oosterbeek, Holland, the Trilateral Commission, 1972-73, created by David Rockefeller and Zbigniew Brzezinski, Jimmy Carter's national security advisor, who is very much involved in this. He's not with us any longer, neither is David Rockefeller, but they're fundamentally involved in this whole web. And the Club of Rome, which was formed in the 1960s, specifically to exploit the environment as a problem to which a solution could be proposed. And what I said, just a very brief aside, but it's important given current events, what I wrote years ago, decades ago, was that the reason we're having what I call the human-caused global warming hoax, people say, well, why would they hoax? Why would they lie to us about that? Because it is a problem, or in this case, a manufactured problem, to which they can offer a solution. And I said, what the solution's going to be, this is decades ago, is to say that they must have centralization of power over the fine detail of people's lives and lifestyles to save the planet. That's what's coming. And now, of course, it's here. And so you've got these cusp organizations, and what their role is, they pull together people in politics and banking and business.
Okay, we'll go to the bottom of the hour break, and we'll be back in a few minutes. Okay.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home. Call toll free 1-855-2-KEEP-IT. That's 1-855-2-KEEP-IT today.
Tired of being lied to by mass media? It's growing more and more apparent today that news is received less and less through standard media outlets. Even with a growing audience every day, RBN is beginning to direct more efforts into social media. Social media and the use of the internet is fast becoming the primary source of people for news, regardless of demographic. RBN has set out to provide some of the best news on the internet through republicbroadcasting.org and also has begun to use the tools to our advantage by way of social media. Republic Broadcasting is now operating a Facebook page to function as yet another avenue to have our collective voice reach new audiences across not only America, but across the globe as well. The Facebook page features not only news, but also an RBN player to listen to our broadcast. Get involved by visiting facebook.com/republicbroadcasting and liking our page and share it with your friends and family, because you can handle the truth.
How healthy are your arteries? Deteriorating circulation has a number of early warning signs. High cholesterol, high blood pressure, fingers and or toes often go cold, arms and or legs often go to sleep, sharp diagonal crease in the earlobe, short walks cause cramping or pains in legs, memory is not as good as it used to be, ankles swell late in the day, chest pain after physical exercise or emotional stress. If you experience even one of these symptoms, your circulatory system is crying out for attention. Extendivite is a natural solution to help improve your overall health. Extendivite is not your average heart tonic. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com or find us on Amazon.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
David Icke's revelation on the truth about 9/11. Okay. Very good.
And intelligence and media is to take this, the spider agenda from the shadows and play it out through into the mainstream arena. And at that point in the web, we're in the world of the scene. We're into governments, government agencies, the so-called deep state, which I've been writing about for 30 years nearly, and now it's common parlance, the deep state, and the banking system, corporations, etc. And you see decisions being made, like with Silicon Valley and all the censorship of alternative information, including that about 9/11. They seem to be random decisions being made in the world of the scene. But they're not. If you go back into the shadows, those random decisions are not random at all. Because if you go back to the spider level, Facebook is Google. Google is Amazon. Amazon is the banking system. The banking system is the biotech cartel, is the big pharma cartel, is government at its core controlling level. And you start to realize that actually this web is what's pulling it all together. And, you know, in terms of 9/11, it's through this web that it was pulled off, with only a very, very few people needing to know about it because of this system that all intelligence agencies use, and funnily enough, secret societies use, of compartmentalization. If, example, you look at the Freemasons. The vast majority of Freemasons in the world are on the bottom three levels of degree, the blue degrees. That's as far as they get. But in the Scottish Rite of Freemasonry, there's 33 degrees, and then there's other degrees above that that most Freemasons don't even know about, where the real deal is. And so the vast majority of Freemasons, they have no idea what other levels of Freemasonry know. And this is how intelligence agencies work. They call it the need-to-know principle. Only let people within the organization know enough to do their job, make their contribution, but not enough to know how their contribution fits in with everyone else's to create a very different picture to what the individual contribution looks like in and of itself. And so this compartmentalization means that so many people can contribute to something like 9/11, but they have no idea that their individual contribution is part of it. You know, if you want to hide a technology about actually what it is, you get the different parts made in different areas of the world, different places, different companies. So they're making a part. They don't know what it's part of. The only people that know what the technology actually is are those right at the end, the very few, who put the parts together. Everybody else is in ignorance. What's this for? I don't know. Our mind's not to reason why. Just make it, mate. And this is how compartmentalization works. And it means that very few people need to know to make something like this happen. So if you look at a police force, you have to control very few people in a police force to dictate who is prosecuted, who is not prosecuted, what's investigated, what's not investigated. You only have to control those positions in the police force that make those decisions. All your rank and file police then react to those decisions. Oh, don't investigate him, don't investigate that. And this is how it's done. Very few people have to be aware of 9/11 to make that happen. And that's how the whole web works.
Okay. And what about this thing that you call the hidden hand, where there are these specific people that were involved in making 9/11 happen,
well,
in politics mainly?
I call what I call the hidden hand, to keep it real simple, is this web. And those within the web who actually know they're making a contribution to a specific end that is very bad for humanity, that's the hidden hand, the sum total of this web of manipulation. And the one, it's going to be very, very controversial. I don't care. I'm interested in the truth, not a statue and a round of applause. Thank you very much. Very controversial is where it leads to who actually did it. And I tell an amazing story. This is part of the web, what I'm going to describe, but fundamentally, globally important and fundamentally, centrally important to what happened on 9/11. In the 17th century, and I'll make this brief, the details all in the book, a man emerged, a Jewish man, called Sabbatai Zevi. And he claimed to be the Jewish Messiah. Messiah had arrived. And he gathered behind him a phenomenal following. All the stuff about this in the book comes from Jewish sources who know about this. And he had a million followers at one point. We're looking at the 17th century. And he created a cult which inverted everything. This is the whole basis of it. So whatever Judaism stood for, it would invert and do the opposite. And people who want to discredit me are going to say he's saying 9/11 was a Jewish plot. I am absolutely not saying that. In fact, I'm saying the opposite. And that's why I say in the book that no one needs to read this book more urgently than Jewish community of the world to see how they've been shafted by this inversion. And this cult became known as Sabbateanism. And so if you had a day in Judaism, which was a day of fasting, then in Sabbateanism, it would be a day of feasting. They inverted everything. So if you had a taboo about sex with children, Sabbateanism would not only remove the taboo, it would make it something to be desired, something to do. And the way they sold this in this cult was that the more evil you do, basically the quicker God will come and sort it out. I mean, you know, I know, but that's how they sold it. And this cult eventually led to a point where Sabbatai Zevi was in the Ottoman Empire in Turkey. And he was given a choice by the Sultan to either renege on his Sabbateanism religion and become a Muslim, or he'd get business. And he decided that he would, considering it, I think I'll become a Muslim. But of course, that was only on the surface. And Sabbateanism, and so many were following Sabbatai Zevi, followed Sabbateanism within the apparently conversion to Islam. And these people became known in the Islamic world as the Donma, which means to turn. And one of the things that I show in the book is that these Donma ended up infiltrating the Islamic religion and becoming the Saudi royal family and creating, I explain the background and the history, in league with the British Empire, the Wahhabi form of extreme Islam, which manifests as the Saudi Arabian version and of ISIS, Islamic State. These are creations of the Donma, who are not Muslim, but Sabbateans, a cult, a satanic cult, which, by the way, as I make clear and Jewish sources make clear in the book, hate Jewish people, hate them with a vengeance. And what this Sabbateanism then became in the next century, the 18th century, was what I call in the book, right to present day, Sabbatean Frankism. And this is because of a man called Jacob Frank, who has been described by Jewish sources as basically one of the most evil people ever to emerge in the Jewish community. Jacob Frank claimed to be the reincarnation of Sabbatai Zevi, in other words, the Messiah, and the reincarnation of the biblical patriarch Jacob. And he took Sabbateanism onto an even greater level of evil and inversion. And every horror you can think of was a good thing and to be desired in this inverted cult. And what it then did was, as it did in Islam, was develop the technique of infiltrating communities and other religions. So Jacob Frank and his Sabbatean Frankists infiltrated the Roman Catholic Church. And they did it by posing as Roman Catholic believers, but really they were Sabbatean Frankists, occultists, what we would call today Satanists. They created Christian Zionism in the southern states, particularly of America, and the vast majority, overwhelming majority of Christian Zionists have no idea that that was the case. And there came a point, again, I'm being as brief as I can, where Jacob Frank, with this inverted satanic religion, hooked up with Mayor Amstel Rothschild, the founder of the Rothschild dynasty, and a Sabbatean Frankist. Not a Jewish person, no, a Sabbatean Frankist. The Sabbatean Frankism religion, or what you call it, cult. And those two then hooked up with a guy called Adam Weishaupt, and together they created an organization called the Illuminati, called the Bavarian Illuminati to start with. And interestingly, this cult, its Bible is the Kabbalah, the esoteric, mystical work of the Jewish belief system. And particularly a book in the Kabbalah called the Zohar. And Zohar means radiance, illuminated, and that's where Illuminati came from. And they then went about from 1776, when it started, infiltrating all these different communities and religions, and they took them over. And it was the Rothschild Sabbatean Frankist cult that created Israel and is behind, indeed is, the Saudi royal family today, is the inner circle of so many of these organizations. And I show in the book, in a chapter called...
The founders of Israel and the Saudi royal family are linked.
Absolutely.
Which would be shocking to hear from most people.
But it wouldn't if you do the research, because in the background, the Israeli government and the Saudi royal family have been close. And what's happened since the emergence of this utter psychopath called the Crown Prince Mohammed bin Salman, who was involved in this horrific murder of Jamal Khashoggi in Turkey, they have become even close in the public arena in many ways, because they are all basically, if you like, Donma in their different forms. And in the book, in a chapter called Atlantic Crossing, I show how this Sabbatean Frankist cult moved in on America and took over American politics, not least through phenomenal, staggering levels of funding, infiltrated the CIA, infiltrated the National Security Agency, the Pentagon, and from that were able to direct inner networks within these organizations, think compartmentalization, which together were behind 9/11. And what I do in the book, and I'm going to be very brief here, all the details in the book, and there's a lot more about what I'm going to say that I'm going to say now. I have three chapters towards the end of the book. They're called Just a Coincidence? Question mark. Just a Coincidence 2? Question mark. Just a Coincidence 3? In which I simply detail the extremists, the ultra-Zionist extremists who were involved before, during, and after 9/11. And it is breathtaking. And before I start, let me say this. The Jewish population of the world is 0.2%. 0.2%. And if you take a mean figure, because they, depending on how you define what a Jewish person is, the mean figure is about 16 million in a world of 7.7 billion. And the people I'm identifying within that community who are not Jewish, they hate Jews, they're Sabbatean Frankists and ultra-Zionists who, not all of them will know about the cult, but they've bought the Israel right or wrong belief system. The people I'm naming are a tiny, tiny number within that 0.2% and within that 16 million.
Thousands?
At most, at the core. So let's have a look. I'm going to take you through a sequence. 1979, a guy called Issa Harel was interviewed by an American Christian Zionist journalist. Issa Harel was called the father of Israeli intelligence. Mr. Big. He was involved for a massive amount of time. And he said to this journalist in 1979 that he thought there was going to be an attack by Muslim extremists on your biggest building in New York. And that they would do this because in their philosophy, also in the philosophy of the Kabbalah, by the way, and that whole area of thought, they represent a phallic symbol of America, and it would break the spirit of America, basically, that kind of theme. Also in 1979, a man called Benjamin Netanyahu organized a conference in Jerusalem and then organized another one in 84 in America, focusing on Arabic terrorism and the need to have preemptive strikes on countries to stop terrorism. And also he wrote a book on the same subject and introduced the concept of a war on terror And weapons of mass destruction also came up in the same period. Then in 1996, an American Israeli called Richard Perle, who was a Pentagon, at a major Pentagon post during 9/11, with other ultra-Zionists, wrote a document for the then Prime Minister, Benjamin Netanyahu, called A Clean Break, in which they called for the removal of Saddam Hussein, basically a war on terror, targeting Iran, targeting Syria, and what have you, Iraq with Saddam Hussein. Following year, in 1997, in America, an organization was formed called the Project for the New American Century. This was a think tank co-founded by two absolute ultra-Zionist extremists called William Kristol and Robert Kagan. And in the Project for the New American Century in 1997 and leading up to 9/11 were Dick Cheney, who would become the de facto president at the time of 9/11 as vice president to the hapless George Bush. Donald Rumsfeld, who would be defense secretary at the time of 9/11. Dov Zakheim, who would be comptroller of the Pentagon, controlling the whole Pentagon budget. Richard Perle, who wrote the Clean Break document, had a Pentagon post. And also in the Project for the New American Century was a man called John Bolton, who has been in the Bush administration until last night as National Security Advisor. In September 2000, oh, by the way, this group then wrote to the then President Clinton urging him to basically invade Iraq and remove Saddam Hussein. This was 1998 they did that. In September 2000, 1 year to the month before 9/11, Project for the New American Century produced a document calling for American troops to, quote, fight and decisively win multiple theater wars to regime change in a list of countries. And these are all the people I've just named that put this together. A few months after this document came out, they would be in positions of power in the Bush administration and the Pentagon. And the countries they listed were Iraq, regime change, Libya, Syria, Iran, North Korea, Lebanon, and others, including Sudan, leading, it said, this document to regime change in China. But this document said in September 2000, this process of transformation, as they called it, in other words, this regime change, would necessarily be a slow one, this is the quote, absent some catastrophic and catalyzing event like a new Pearl Harbor. That would be a problem that would justify the solution, which was the agenda in this document. These people that wrote that came to power in the Pentagon and the White House in January 2001. And the ultra-ultra-Zionist Michael Chertoff was appointed head of the criminal division of the Justice Department, who would then, by that role, oversee the criminal investigation into 9/11, non-investigation, actually. And in September 2001, America had what Bush called at the time our Pearl Harbor, the Pearl Harbor of the 21st century. As a result of that, this list of countries started being ticked off. And I quote a New York Times report just after 9/11, revealing that on September the 19th and 20th, a group called the Defense Policy Board, including all these characters, including Richard Perle, had met to plot the overthrow of Saddam Hussein. This is days after 9/11. This was planned from the start. Then, in 2007, it's a little bit out of sequence, but it's important to say this. A man called General Clark was interviewed on a internet show called Democracy Now, 2007. And he told an amazing story. He said that, and this guy was Supreme Allied Commander of forces, NATO forces at one point, was involved in the war against Serbia, etc. He said he went to the Pentagon days after 9/11, and he met Rumsfeld, he met Wolfowitz, the Deputy Defense Secretary, who was also from the Project for the New American Century, ultra Zionist. And he went downstairs and he met a general, friend of his. And the general said to him, we're going to invade Iraq. This is days after 9/11. He said, we're going to invade Iraq. He said, are they involved in 9/11? He said, not that we know, no. Why are we going to invade Iraq? Well, no. Anyway, he said, I went away. I came back a few weeks later, by which time America are in Afghanistan. An invasion that had to be, from pure logistics, organized long before 9/11, by the way. And he said, I met the same general. And he said, I said to him, why haven't we invaded Iraq? I thought we were going to invade Iraq. And he said, the general said to me, it's worse than that, sir. He said, well, I've just had this from upstairs, Rumsfeld office. We are going to invade 7 countries in 5 years. What? And he named them. We're going to invade Iraq, regime change Iraq, we're going to regime change Libya, Syria, Iran, so on, North Korea. And so what happened after 9/11 that was in that document in September 2000 was all planned, but it couldn't have happened. They admit it in the document without 9/11.
To continue watching the rest of the episode for free, visit our website.
Okay, we'll go to the top of the hour break, and we'll maybe take a break at the top of the hour as well, okay?
It's happening, ladies and gentlemen. We here at RBN are working with FrontSight Firearms Training Institute to bring our audience the best in combat, tactical, and defensive firearms training. Whether you're a private citizen who is new to firearms, or you have a concealed weapon permit, and want a level of training that surpasses what you've received from your local gun range, FrontSight provides priceless education and skills taught by seasoned law enforcement, military, and private citizen instructors to levels that far exceed law enforcement and military standard. With nearly 1 million responsible citizens trained from every town, city, and state from across the United States, FrontSight has bolstered the Patriot movement to a whole new level. Contact Dan Sutterfield by phone at 573-762-2356 or 573-465-2356 or shoot him an email at domedan, D-O-M-E-D-A-N, at hotmail.com. This is a limited time opportunity. Don't miss it.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network, because you can handle the truth.